everybody. Welcome back to another episode of App Chatter. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the new iPhone hardware that got leaked or stolen. A Hulu app might be coming as soon as this summer, and we've got some more reviews, of course. But first, I need to clarify something that I talked about last week. I mentioned that Jeff, one of our guest hosts that we've had recently, he was no longer welcome back as a guest on the show because he has an iPad, and I don't have an iPad, and so he is not going to be guesting on the show anymore until after I get my iPad. And I want to clarify before I go any further that I'm sticking to my guns.
That's true.
It is very true because Jeff is no longer a guest. He is officially a member of the staff now. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Hello.
Welcome. Welcome to App Chatter permanently.
I'm still waiting for my signing bonus check to come in the mail. So if you could check on that.
I'm still waiting for mine too, Jeff. I wouldn't hold your breath.
Okay. I'll get right on that. Yeah, Lou, how you doing without your check?
Not bad.
Oh, man, to get paid for podcasting. Yeah, we for those of you who may be curious, we do this as a labor of love. We do not get paid. And we talked about that a little bit last week. This is, you know, I joke about it, but it's kind of a serious thing. We don't get paid to do the reviews, and we do sometimes get promo codes for apps. But, you know, and at some point we might get advertising and we might get a little bit of revenue in from that. But I want to be very clear. If something sucks, we're going to say it sucks. Okay, we're doing this out of our love for the iPhone and the iPad and for the applications that we're using, but also because we want to give a service to the listeners. We want to help you guys be able to determine what's worth picking up and what's not. And if we recommend something to you guys just because, you know, we're getting nudged in the background to do so, and then you're not happy with it, you're going to stop listening, and we don't want that. So I just want to point out that, yeah, we get free promo codes and stuff like that. But, you know, I will come right out and say it right now. And hopefully Rob, the boss over at appchatter.com, won't fire me for this. But we have gotten promo codes for some apps that we have not reviewed on the show because some of them we just don't get time to. And some of them have not been very good. And I'm not going to say something's good when it's not. I'm also not going to tear it apart if it doesn't deserve it either, though. So, you know, that kind of goes in both ways there. But anyway, I just wanted to clear that up. I don't think we need to spend a whole lot of time on that.
Way to start the show off on a high note there, buddy.
Yeah, well, okay, here's the high note, though. We are here to help you. Okay, and that's actually kind of a big deal this week in particular because there's one app that there's a lot of buzz about, and I bet a lot of people are wondering whether or not it's worth picking it up. And, you know, you can spend a lot of money on apps. It's a dollar here and $2 there, but all that adds up. So our goal is to help you be able to sift through all of the hundreds of thousands of apps on the iTunes store and find the diamonds in the rough. That's a positive thing, right?
Absolutely. Sure.
Okay. Well, see, there we go. All right. So, let's see where to begin. Here's another little positive thing. A couple of announcements before we get to the news and the reviews and all that. Last week, I talked about WarpGate a little bit. And I said the iPad version looked like it was probably worth it. And the iPhone was really good, but at $5, it was a little pricier than I would prefer. And I wasn't sure it was really worth $5 on the iPhone. I have played it a little bit more, and they also did an update. And rather than just tapping buttons during combat now, you can actually move your ship around and try to dodge the fire a little bit and stuff. It's not, I mean, combat is still not the purpose of the game, but you've got a little bit more interactivity in combat now, and you can do a little bit more with it. And I got to say, between that and getting a little bit further into the game and following some of the quests and the missions and stuff, I like it. And I got to change my review last week. I would say that I would recommend this on the iPhone, even at the price at $5. But if you have an iPad, I would still get the iPad version instead. So I just wanted to clear that up. Let's see what else. One other thing. And I'm very excited about this. And this is the last announcement for today. We have released, we over at the Random Chatter Podcast Network, we for me is both at the App Chatter family and the Random Chatter family. So it gets confusing sometimes. But
it's a lot of chatter.
It is. There's a lot of chatter. The Random Chatter Podcast Network has released an iPhone application. It is now available in the iTunes store. It is $1.99, and the revenue from it goes basically toward supporting the network and the hosting fees and such. And AppChatter.com has agreed to let the App Chatter podcast appear as part of the Random Chatter podcast network and in this app. Now, without going into all of the details on all the features, which I think are kind of awesome, I'll address the elephant in the room. Why would you download a podcast application if you can just get the podcasts from iTunes directly? And that's a legitimate question, right? I mean, it seems kind of simple. But the reason is you can stream these directly, so you don't have to download the other shows. And if you wanted to check out other shows on the network, you can sample things without having to go into iTunes and subscribe to them and, you know, figure out syncing the five most recent unplayed such and such. And, you know, the maintenance side of it is removed. Again, you can stream it, including over 3G. You don't have that 20 megabyte download limit over 3G. So if you're on the go a lot, this would be very helpful. And you can also play it in the background.
Ooh, that's
streaming,
nice.
Streaming in the background. Yeah, so it's kind of like a pseudo multitasking. What it does is it actually opens it up in Safari as a QuickTime file. And then because Safari is a built-in application and can multitask, you can then check email or Twitter or, you know, do We Rule or whatever it is you want to do and still listen to the podcast. So that's kind of awesome. And then finally, we can add, it gives us the ability to add in bonus content like blooper reels, or we can attach PDF files to individual episodes. We're actually going to be doing a Random Chatter weekly newsletter as a PDF file. I thought I'd whip some stuff up in Pages and give me a chance to play around a little bit with that. So we're going to be doing that. We're going to have bonus content. I don't know exactly what we're going to be doing for App Chatter yet, but we will be doing something. So if that sounds interesting to you, hop into the iTunes store and do a search for Random Chatter, and it should be the only application in there. And you know, check it out. Let us know what you think.
Would it be kind of self-serving if we did our own app review?
I was wondering.
Well, that
about
was my
that.
Pick like, today. Thanks for reading.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay. That's a little, you know. Well, you know. Hey, if people are listening, hopefully they already like us and they already would give us a favorable review. So there you go.
There you go. We'll just read straight from the iTunes reviews. That'll be as unbiased as we can get.
Oh, that could be scary. You know, but that brings up a good point. We encourage people to go into iTunes and do a search for the App Chatter podcast and give us reviews there. You know, rate us, tell people what you think, because, you know, if we can get more listeners in and we can get some interactivity and people can write in questions or comments or, hey, I'm looking for this type of app, what do you recommend? That just benefits all of the listeners. You know, that benefits you people out there listening currently, too. So go in and tell people what you think of us in the iTunes store, and that would be awesome. Unless you say bad things, and that would be mean. So don't do that. Okay. All right. In the news, Lou, why don't you take over here? I'm going to take a sip of my iced tea here. Go ahead.
Certainly. Well, we got the first news is back to iPad news again, I guess. They're pushing back some of the dates on, I guess, existing orders from the original order, but I guess orders that are placed now are being pushed back to May 7th. So not too far off, a couple weeks, not too bad. I guess The original pre-orders that were done on the opening day, I forget when that was, a couple weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago?
On the 12th? No.
Yeah.
They arrived on the 3rd, so it was, yeah, sometime last
month. That's
right.
That's right, yeah. So they're pushed back till the April 30th date, which is, what, a week after, I guess, they were originally supposed to come out?
Well, not... roughly. So here's the thing. Yeah, so for me, this is both good news and bad news. The good news is that mine, which was one of the original pre-orders, is not being pushed back until May 7th. So if you're in the U.S., and you're doing a pre-order for a 3G iPad unit, you're not going to get it until May 7th. If you already did a pre-order, I think the cutoff was sometime last week. So if it said that it was going to ship in late April, the exact date is supposed to be April 30th. Now, originally, people like myself were assuming that because the original international ship date was going to be April 24th, for both the Wi-Fi and the 3G, it seemed to make sense that that would also be the US 3G date. So I was,
you were counting on it.
I might have actually canceled some plans on Saturday to yeah, because I'm a sucker and I'm actually that desperate to get mine. But I have the plans are back on. Yeah, I was kind of bummed. It's actually going to be a week from tomorrow, I guess. So it'll be
next Friday.
Next Friday. Yeah, man, I'm just.
Hey, it's coming. It's coming. Yeah, just relax. Breathe easy.
It's okay. You know, if it makes you feel any better, when you get yours, it will probably have a camera in it.
I'm hoping. That's why I'm waiting a year.
Yeah, and maybe an OLED display.
Keep dreaming.
Well, it might be $27,000, but it could happen.
Yeah, no, I couldn't afford that.
Yeah.
But, you know, news that makes me happy now, since I'm not getting an iPad, the only thing I'm holding out hope for is, you know, the new iPhone hardware coming out. And AT&T has already restricted their employees from taking vacation in June now. So that kind of makes me think, you know, it's going to happen like it usually does past couple of years. I can go out there and get my new iPhone.
Yeah, because you can't really expect that they would get that many new subscribers based merely on an operating system upgrade.
No. You know? Yeah.
I don't think that would pull people into AT&T stores. Yeah. So that's a good indicator. You people out there holding it for new iPhone. Pattern
every year now.
Exactly.
I mean, that's nothing more than Apple just doing what they do. And guess what? There will probably be new iPods coming out this September. Newsflash.
Yeah.
Because there always are.
That's true. I kind of wonder with the success of the iPad and with as many iPhones as they've sold. I forget what the numbers are, but there's something crazy like 55 million or something. I'm wondering what else they're going to do with the iPod. I mean, obviously the Shuffle, you're always going to have the cheap model that's going to be lightweight and useful for exercise that people don't want to spend a lot of money on, but they want to just basically have some music. And, you know, I guess maybe the Nano, but is that going to be it, do you think?
Well, I mean, the Classic has been kind of the redheaded stepchild for a while.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, you go into an Apple store and they're like two of them on display sitting in some dusty corner. And that's been obvious for a while. I think once the iPod Touch came out, that really was going to be the flagship iPod. And then I think the Nano and the Shuffle still fill very specific, you know, needs for consumers. I know that I'm debating on whether or not to get a Nano so that I can load it mostly with, you know, little baby Einstein stuff for my daughter and some, you know, kind of kids music and stuff, but then also use it with the built-in FM radio, you know, when I work out and stuff. So,
oh, I forgot about that.
So yeah, and obviously it's still really tiny. It's really easy. And, the Shuffle, you know, the Shuffle is what it's always been, just that uber tiny kind of thing. And so, I don't know. I mean, I could see them doing away with the iPod Classic, but maybe they just have a soft spot for it. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, I got to tell you, though, the Shuffle, as much as I'm thrilled with most of the Apple products, this most recent Shuffle, I want a button on it. First of all, the built-in iPhone and iPod earplugs, they don't fit in my ear. The opening for my ear canal, I guess, is just too big and they fall out. So I can't use the stock iPhone headphones. Mm. So you have to have that clicker on it for the Shuffle.
Right.
Unless you buy an adapter and then, you know, well, there's another accessory they're getting you on. And at that point, you almost might as well get a Nano. And the other thing, too, is the little, you know, the Morse code thing. We used to joke that when it first came out, we were reading off the tech specs for it. We were saying, yeah, you can actually search for songs too. You just have to know Morse code, you know, dot, 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 you know, I don't know. I don't get it. I like the fact that it's small.
Is that Nano is so small. Why do we really even need the Shuffle? I mean, I got the first one that came out, the chewing gum stick one. It's kind of cool, but
I liked the little clip with the circular button layout on it. I liked that one. The idea is you can clip it to things, and if you're going to go running or exercising, you don't want something that weighs a lot. And honestly, the armbands, they're not bad, but not everybody likes them. They're kind of they're a little bit more intrusive. So having something lightweight, I mean, there were a set of headphones you could get for the previous model where you actually put the Shuffle on the headphones, like on the headset.
Yeah, I remember those.
I did see those, yep.
Yeah, I don't know if they were any good, but, you know, the concept, at least, seemed pretty practical. So, I mean, I think that it definitely has a market. I just, you know, just a simple play and pause button on the unit. I don't know. Anyway,
it's not too much to ask for.
Yeah, I know it's a bit of a tangent.
And why can't it run any apps? I mean, really?
I know.
There's no Shuffle app store. That's just ridiculous. I'll tell you what.
It'd be perfect for audiobooks. They could just read them to you. It'd be great. It's got that built-in speech thing. The built-in
voice, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really exciting voice, too.
Read you your emails. And that's about as exciting as most of my emails are, so it would fit just fine.
Absolutely.
Anyway, all right. So back on topic here. Let's not spend too much time on the iPad because I know that a lot of people out there aren't getting one and don't want to be bombarded with it. I just got a couple of more things. And Jeff, you've got your iPad, right? Do you have it handy?
I do.
I need you to help me test something.
Okay.
Can you pull up something with the keyboard on it?
No. Okay. Awesome.
Email or whatever. While you're doing that, I'm going to throw out a little bit of trivia here. Apple has allegedly been selling an estimated $372,000 in iPad apps per day.
Wow.
Now do the math there. $372,000 a day, and that's just in iPad apps, and more specifically, that's just the top 1,000 iPad apps.
And Apple's taking, what, 30% of that?
30% of that. That's a lot of money each day.
Yeah. For just basically passing the apps along.
Yeah. Now, well, speaking of the stocks, yeah, they say that those
aren't that Apple in business to make money.
I know, right? Yeah, the analysts are saying it's, I don't know if it already has or not, but it's going to be significantly over 300. I guess they were going to be pushing 300, and then they're saying 305, and I've heard 320 from some places, so we'll see.
The more money they make, the longer they'll be in business, and the longer we can keep getting cool stuff. Absolutely.
Well, that's true. At least people don't have to worry about, you know, not having iPad or iPhone support for very long. It's not like the company's going to go under. It's not like they're going to get sold like Palm.
Right. Yeah.
So, all right, Jeff, Palm. You have a keyboard up.
All right, go ahead. What's up?
Okay. I don't know if you know this or not, but you know how on the main keyboard you don't have the apostrophe, which is kind of stinky. You have to hit the button to pull up the alternate screen with the numbers and the right symbols and stuff like that. If you hold down on the comma, then the apostrophe pops up above it.
That is correct.
And then if you let go, it does the apostrophe. Or if you tap the comma and slide off of it, it'll do an apostrophe. And a lot of people don't know that. What I want to know, maybe you've tried it, can you do the same thing with the period to get quotes?
You cannot. The period does not, yeah, does not do anything.
That would be awesome.
You have to actually go to the separate layout with the numbers at the top to get that.
Oh, well. Well, you know, at least they did something with the apostrophe. So there's our tip of the week. If you have an iPad and you're complaining about the fact that you can't do like apostrophes or you know, you have to keep switching over to the other keyboard, you can just slide off of the comma and you get an apostrophe. Also, if you need to do accents on any characters, if you hold down on that character, on that letter, then it will pop up all of the different available available accents and umlauts and things like that.
Really, so, though, the iPhone or the iPad dictionary, though, when you're typing, though, if you type in, mm-hmm, like won't, you know, it'll insert the apostrophe for you automatically.
Yeah.
So it kind of takes that into account. So I've just kind of been not typing apostrophes and just letting it fix it.
So really, the quotes would have been better after all.
Maybe.
You know, yeah. So the iPhone users out there, here's a tip for you. It will do the same thing with things like won't. And it's kind of confusing on the its, because ITS actually is a legitimate word and should be used more often than people do. But if you type in ITS, it will insert the apostrophe. But you have other words, too, that if you type an extra character at the end, it will insert the apostrophe in the word. For example, the word were, R-E-R-E, is fine, and people use it all the time. But if you type an extra E at the end, then it will replace it with we are, like we're, W-E apostrophe R-E.
I did not know that. That's good.
Yeah.
That's been an iPhone tip for a while, actually. It's really,
yeah,
really
but
handy.
You'd be surprised.
Oh, no, I feel really bad I didn't know it.
Well, it's one of those things that it got announced early on, and it got spread all over the internet, and then it disappeared, and you know, it wasn't ever spoken of again. So a lot of people who didn't get iPhones early on might have missed it. But yeah, if you've got words that it can be a normal word, but you could also put an apostrophe in it. If you type in that extra vowel at the end, it will normally put the apostrophe in. So there you go. There's your tips for this week. And I think we're done with iPad news. One really cool piece of news that I'm excited about, and it's kind of technically iPad related, but Hulu is going to be offering optional $10 a month subscriptions this summer. And analysts are predicting that this is also going to coincide with an iPad app. And it's rumored to begin testing as early as late May. I've heard some specific dates. I don't know the significance of those specific dates, so I'm not going to give those out. But yeah, so to clarify, the $9.95 subscription for Hulu is... right now, if you go to Hulu, generally you can get like the last five episodes of a show. And what this would let you do is this would let you go into the back catalog and get the entire season anytime you want it. So it's an optional type of thing. If you rely on Hulu, and I know a lot of people who do, I know a lot of people have actually cut the cable, so to speak, and they don't have cable TV anymore. They just get all of their television on the internet. And I know this would be great for them. But what do you guys think? If you had an iPad or an iPhone, if there were a Hulu iPhone app, would you be willing to pay a subscription service to be able to get any show you want anytime you want?
Now, this does or does not affect advertising on Hulu, or do we know? Yeah, that was my question.
You know, we don't know. We don't know. The benefit of the subscription, technically, is a much, much larger selection of episodes. For example, you know, you might be able to get the last five episodes of this season of Lost. But if you were a subscriber, not only would you get all of the episodes of season six, but you would also get seasons 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. So that's supposed to be the benefit of the subscription. I assume that they would probably still have ads in it too, but we haven't heard.
Yeah, see, for me, now if that were like something a lot cheaper, you know, $4.99 or something like that, I think that would be a bargain for me. But $10 a month to only get access to back catalog, I personally don't see enough value in that.
Okay.
Unless it's going to affect advertising.
Okay, so if they took out the ads, then you would consider it.
Yes. Now, if they said you can only use an iPad/iPhone app if you're a subscriber, then I think that would be worth it regardless of the advertising change.
And I'm wondering if they'll do that, because they have been saying all along that if they can, they were trying to find some way of doing a subscription service for the iPad. So that could be.
Yeah. And yeah. The other thing that I heard and tied into this rumor is that they're going to take the Hulu advertising and make it mimic kind of what traditional TV has been like, you know, with three or four commercials and a break.
Ooh, that'd be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they do that, they're going to, I don't think they're going to get many people paying $10 a month for that. I mean, that's one of those trade-offs. You either go in one direction or you go in the other. You don't do both.
Yeah. Well, that's what they now see. That's what cable television used to be like, you know, satellite radio is right now. You have a premium service, you get a lot more channels, and you have no commercials. That's what satellite radio is right now, right?
Right.
Well, cable TV used to be the same way. You have a premium service, you get a lot more channels, you have no commercials. Well, now you have to pay for cable and you get commercials.
Yeah.
So they've done it before.
That's very true. The only thing I can think of that might be different this time around is that now we have the internet, and if people don't like the pricing model, they're going to go out and BitTorrent.
That's true. That's very true.
Now, I'm not condoning that. I'm going to be very clear.
Yeah, I mean, or there's other legal aspects out there, too. I mean, certainly back catalog stuff you're looking for, Netflix iTunes has a lot of that.
Or Netflix, yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I use Netflix streaming for a lot of the old box set DVD stuff all the time.
Yeah.
The quality is great, and there's no commercials.
That's how I started watching Dexter.
Is it? Yeah. Yeah. Now, of course, the Instant Watch selection isn't quite as good. However, Netflix has apparently made some deals recently. 20th Century Fox, I think, is one of them. I forget. I don't remember.
Warner Brothers.
Was it Warner Brothers?
Yeah.
That would be awesome because they've got a large selection.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's television. Not great on movies, but it's great for TV, DVD stuff.
Yeah. So I don't know. Lou, what do you think? Would you do the subscription thing?
Like, I don't think I'd pay $9 a month for it. No.
Okay.
I mean, it just seems too much to me. I mean, I look at my cable bill each month and I go, geez, I'm going to pay another $9 a month just so I can watch it when I'm mobile. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and with this economy too, I mean, you've got an iPad and then you may or may not be paying for data and you're paying for your internet connection and you probably still have television, like you said, a cable bill. And then you're going to pay another $10 to use it on devices that you're already, again, you're also paying for your internet and you may be paying for a data connection too. With this economy, I think people are trying to figure out where they can cut corners, not where they can add new subscriptions.
Yeah. Now, I mean, if there was a way to make this, you know, if I'm going to cut my cable, for instance, and there's a way to tether my iPad to my big screen TV at home, well, that would be a different story because now I could watch that in the comfort of my living room, sit back on the couch, but I don't see them doing that.
And I think that's where Netflix has increased their value. They've done so much to get their streaming into Blu-ray boxes and built into TVs, built into all the major three game consoles now.
Yep.
I see a value in that.
Yeah, no, I started doing it on the PlayStation 3, and it was such a hassle to use that. I finally broke down and bought a Blu-ray player, and now it's a lot easier.
It's pretty easy on the Xbox.
Is it?
Because you don't have to have a separate disc for it. On the Wii and on the PlayStation 3, you have to have a separate disc.
Yep.
Whereas with the Xbox, you know, if there's a game I'm halfway through completing, I can leave the disc in there, but I go to the main menu with the Xbox Live, and I can pull it up that way. Now, that being said, I think I want to say that for the Xbox, you have to be an Xbox Live subscriber in order to be able to use Netflix. So there is that catch.
And I know that in a future PS3 update, they're going to build that into the OS so you don't have to have the disc.
Well, that'd be nice. That would be good. The other problem I have is mine's like an original PS3 and it runs really hot and the fan's really loud. So it's not great for doing home theater.
Yeah, see, I have a Slim and I really haven't had any issues with it. I've enjoyed it. I was really excited when that came out, actually.
Cool. You know, you brought up something interesting, being able to plug a device into a TV and be able to play back. And I want to point out something about the iPad. A lot of people are aware of the fact that there is a VGA output connector. And so theoretically, you should be able to output it to a VGA monitor, and or some high-def televisions have VGA inputs where you would normally, say, plug a laptop or something like that into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you should be aware that if you get content through, say, iTunes, first of all, let's back up a step. There are only certain applications for which this works. You have to, as a developer, you have to specifically code your application to take advantage of the video out and then tell it how you're going to take advantage of it. So the Netflix application, I've not tried it, but I would assume it does not support video out because it wasn't designed that way. Whether they do it in the future, I don't know. But the iTunes stuff you get will theoretically be displayed out through this VGA adapter unless you purchased it from the iTunes store, because then it's DRM'd. And you have to have a straight digital-to-digital chain from the source to the display device. I'm not going to get into all the technicalities and the acronyms and all of that, but as soon as you go to an analog display format like VGA, it breaks that digital chain and it says, nope, we can't let you do it because you could be copying it.
Yep. I run into this all the time when I have my main display. I have a Mac Pro and I have a 30-inch cinema display as my main display, and I have a 21-inch old Dell monitor that I have hooked up via VGA. And so I'll start playing something that's in high def on iTunes on my main display, and I'll try to move it to my second monitor, and it kicks it over. It stops me. Won't let me do it.
Yeah, so people keep that in mind. I don't want to dissuade anybody from the iPad, but you know, one of the things we're here for, like I said, is a service to you guys. We want to make sure you're well-informed. You can't just plug an iPad into your television and expect to use that as a way to display iTunes content on the big screen, at least not DRM'd content. If you have your own video somehow, well, then there's probably other legal issues, but ironically, yeah, those will work. So,
and more than that, too, you're not going to get like an output of your iPad's screen.
Right.
You won't be able to see it flick around like they do in Keynotes. That's kind of a secret Apple API they only do for Keynotes.
Right.
Much. Yep.
Yeah, so you can't like you can't plug a game in or like Scrabble or something like that. You can't whip around the home screen. None of that stuff gets outputted.
Except for Keynote. The actual program on the iPad, Keynote.
Yeah, Keynote will.
Yeah.
Is that all that'll do? Just Keynote and the video player?
I think as of right now, probably. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know on the iPhone, it's really only, you know, the player. Maybe the Photos app. Maybe that'd be the only thing I can think of would be the Photos app.
Yeah, maybe Photos. Yeah, okay. Let's see. For you UK users out there, there is a little bit of good news, maybe. The Mac User, which is a UK site, macuser.co.uk, it's reporting that Google is bringing turn-by-turn navigation to various different mobile devices, including the iPhone, someday. It will be sometime soon. They have not revealed when it will be, but they are working on bringing turn-by-turn navigation to the iPhone. The interesting aspect of it is that the maps will be pre-cached locally when you request the navigation, when you tell it where you want to go. It's going to download all of those maps locally to the device. And as you're driving along, even if you lose connectivity, you'll still get the directions as long as you stay on route. Which, that's kind of cool. A lot of people were worrying about the Google Maps if they ever did turn-by-turn based on that. You still got to have a connection in order to download those little map tiles. And apparently Google's got that taken care of. They're going to pre-cache them. Now, I believe this is going to be for the UK only. I don't really know. Here in the US, I think there's some licensing issue about where Google gets the maps from. And it can't be used for turn-by-turn navigation.
So there was an agreement that Apple had with somebody else that was doing turn-by-turn stuff on the iPhone. You could use maps, but you couldn't do turn-by-turn.
I don't know about that. That could be. My understanding, though, is that Google gets their maps from what's the government organization that does all the satellite mapping?
Can't remember off the top of my head.
I don't remember. If I had one of our government geeks on the show, Brian or the other Jeff from Tech Chatter, I'm sure they could tell me. But anyway, there's a government organization who will allow satellite maps to be used by different companies, but there are certain restrictions on how they can be used. And my understanding was that Google was getting their maps from them, and as part of the licensing agreement, could not allow them to be used for turn by turn. I don't know. Maybe that rumor's not true. Anyway, if you're in the UK, keep an eye out for that. That sounds kind of cool, and I kind of wish we had that here. And, you know, that brings up another good point. Turn-by-turn navigation programs are expensive, and I'm not rich, so I'm not going to go and get a bunch of different turn-by-turn navigation programs to test out for the show, though I guess we could check into maybe getting some promo codes for that. But if there's anybody out there who is using turn-by-turn navigation software, whether it be TomTom, or I think AT&T's got one available. If you're using something like that, could you please write us and let us know what your experience with it has been? Do you like your application? Has it been reliable? Is the interface easy to use? Send us an email, podcast@appchatter.com. We would really like to hear from you about that.
I really need an excuse to get the TomTom kit.
Oh, yeah.
I've been looking for ever since that came out, was announced. I've really wanted some way to justify that purchase. This may be it.
I may have to call it research
and write it off for taxes.
Yeah, there you go. It's a nice looking mount too. That's the thing. I could care less about the navigation.
I've heard from somebody who uses it every day that they absolutely love it.
Really?
Yeah, that they think it's reliable, gets them everywhere. So, and this is a guy I trust. So,
that just makes me sad. Because the thing is, the hardware is like $130 US.
Yeah, I think it was $130, $140 for the kit.
Yeah, and that's not including the app.
No, I think the kit is $100 even.
Really?
Let me look it up. I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah, for some reason, I thought it was $140 with the app and the kit.
Well, okay, that's not that bad. And you know, if you're cringing at that, think about the fact that if you go out and buy a GPS unit, to put on the dashboard of your car, it's going to be $199, $299.
All right.
Maybe so, more if you wanted to do more. Oh, go ahead, Jeff.
The kit for the iPhone is $119.
Okay.
The kit for the iPod Touch is $99. And that does not include the app, which is $59 in the App Store.
Oh, is that dropped?
Mm. Yeah,
I thought it was $100 when it came out. Oh, okay. So that's not that bad.
Yeah, so I think, you know, end to end, and of course that kit adds a second GPS antenna.
Right.
Which I think is the good thing about it, because I mean, I've had, you know, sometimes my iPhone get a little confused. I have a 3GS, and so it'll still think I'm fit, you know, 20 miles away sometimes, and have to snap back. And I think the addition of a second GPS antenna is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
That's really not that bad. Save battery power too, I guess, right?
Yeah, because it's charging it too. Because you can hook it up and you can charge it, and you can also take an auxiliary out. So you can just put this in your dock, have a GPS ready to go, be charged and running out to your, if you have an auxiliary input in your car, you have kind of an all-in-one solution there.
Now, how does it get the power? Does it get it from the cigarette lighter adapter?
Yeah, there's this, which is an optional. You can, or you don't have to plug it in, but you can, you know, plug it in there. Hmm. So, yeah, we'll.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe tax write off for the show. That might be a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I just got back from Dallas on a business trip, and I could have written that into the quote for the client. Dang it!
Nice. There you go.
Yeah.
All right. Some quick app news. Square Enix. That might sound familiar if you are a Final Fantasy fan. They are putting all of their applications on sale for $2 off in celebration of what may be the most expensive game on the App Store, Chaos Rings, which incidentally is not on sale for $2 off. But all of their other cheaper games are on sale for even cheaper. And we'll talk about Chaos Rings in a few minutes. But the games include Crystal Defenders, which is now $5.99, Final Fantasy I and Final Fantasy II, which are each $6.99. And the reviews for those have been pretty good. If you've ever played the original Final Fantasy games on the old Nintendo consoles, apparently these are very, very good ports of those, and they're highly recommended. I have not played them. I want to be clear, this is not a review. Have either of you two picked them up or played them at all?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, they're generally pretty favored. Final Fantasy 13 Larger Than Life Gallery, which used to be $8.99, and this one is $3 off for $5.99. And let me tell you what you get with this. You get some pictures and a calendar.
Nice.
Yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't hold back.
Yeah, I've got some issues with this particular release, but we'll moving right along here. Hills and Rivers Remain, I'm not even familiar with that one. That's $4.99. A game called Sliding Heroes, which I have played. I do have that, and it's not all that great. The idea is you've got a game board, and you've got a collection of characters. And they have different classes like fighter, mage, stuff like that. And you tilt the iPhone around and they slide around this game board that has different enemies and stuff. So you slide them into the enemies and so your fighter hits the bad guy and it does damage to him and he kills him. And then you have to kind of move him around this little maze to get out. It's kind of silly. Fortunately, it's on sale for only 99 cents. So, you know, look at the screenshots in the iTunes store if you think you'll like it. 99 says isn't that bad. Song Summoner is another one. I've heard it's pretty good. It's based on a game that they did for another system. I don't remember if it was the Nintendo DS or something else. I heard the port over to the iPhone isn't that great, though. But I don't know. Some people really like it. It's $7.99. And then finally, Vanguard Storm is $3.99. So if you're into any of those, I think the surefire winners here would be the Final Fantasy I and Final Fantasy II. So you might want to pick those up. If you've been holding out for those, this might be a good time to get them. Also, Sonic the Hedgehog 2 was released this week. And people say it's really good. It's a pretty clean port over from the original. There are some responsiveness issues, but people are saying that it was there in the original game too. So,
yeah, so they maybe copied that's everything.
Not a big deal. Yeah.
Even the bad stuff. Nice.
It's authentic.
Very.
Very retro.
So, Yeah, but it's, they say it handles pretty well. The controls, it's basically a directional pad on one side with an action button on the other. And it looks like it is the complete game with all of the levels. It's not like pared down at all. So it's $5.99, which, you know, for a professionally developed game is not that bad. Let's move on to the iPhone hardware issue.
The big news.
Yeah. Now, there's two pieces of this. One is the fact that the new iPhone hardware has been leaked, and we have some specifics about the device. And the other is the controversy surrounding the events. And that's almost been more newsworthy than the actual device itself.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, well, you know, if you look at a lot of the blogs out there, everybody's talking about the situation behind it and the letters back and forth between Gizmodo and Apple. And
yeah, I mean, obviously there's a story there because of, yeah, you know, just, oh my gosh, how does this happen? But, I mean, I still feel that, you know, a major news blog getting their hands on what is essentially the next iPhone months before it's unveiled, I think is the bigger story, unless they broke in and stole it. Which they obviously didn't do.
Well, they did not break in and steal it. But in my personal opinion, and I want to make it clear that this is my personal opinion, it was not quite as above the board as it should have been. Let's get that out of the way, and then we'll get to the actual specs of the phone, because in the long run, that's really what is going to matter.
Yeah.
So an Apple employee walks into a bar.
Da-da-da.
Yeah, and of course, that's been the butt of all of the jokes on the websites. So he goes into a bar, and he updates his Facebook status, and then he leaves the bar, and he leaves his prototype iPhone. And so somebody picks up the phone off of the floor, and they get in touch with some tech media sites. Now, rumor has it that Engadget was first, and Engadget talked to their lawyers, and they passed. They turned it down. So then they went to Gizmodo, who jumped all over it, and they paid $5,000 for the phone. Some stories say $10,000. I think the more generally accepted amount is $5,000. They then proceeded to tear the thing apart under the premise that they needed to check to see whether it was authentic, even though it seemed to be pretty clear from the outside that it was likely authentic. And they claimed that it was, quote, lost unclaimed property. And Apple claims it was stolen. So there's a little bit of a he said, she said type of thing going on. I'll come back to that in a minute. So they somehow tracked down the Apple employee who lost it. It contacted them. And I think that they were trying to verify whether or not this thing was authentic. And or rather, I think they were trying to get Apple to admit that it was authentic. I think they believed it. They were just trying to get somebody to make it official so that then they could go to their site and say, hey, no, we have confirmation this is official. Because in the meantime, the pictures are up on the internet and everybody's like, oh yeah, okay, Photoshop. Yeah, every year there's new mock-ups or pictures of what people think it's going to be. This isn't real.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy apparently said, we got somebody who's going to contact you about it pretty soon, and we'll make some arrangements. So then Gizmodo gets, and I'm skipping a few of the details in the back and forth, but Gizmodo gets a letter from Apple. And honestly, I think the letter from Apple was pretty tame.
It really was not that mean.
Yeah, they really could have like raked Gizmodo over the coals over this. And I think, you know, it was basically, I don't have it here in front of me, but it was basically, hi, we understand that some of our property has come under your possession, and we'd like to make arrangements to get it back. And please contact us and let us know when and where we can pick it up. Gizmodo's response, in my personal opinion, was pretty snarky. It was like, hey, Bob, nice of you to contact us. Yeah, this thing's been burning a hole in our pockets. We couldn't be more glad to get rid of it and blah, 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 and acting like all like, I don't know. To me, it felt completely unprofessional.
It's like a text message conversation with your friend from high school.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, it almost sounded like playground talk. You know, it was like two kids, or one kid and one adult kind of saying, well, you know, hey, I got this thing.
Yeah.
Even at the end of the letter when they said, you know, I hope the guy still works there. I hope you didn't fire him type thing.
Oh, yeah. It's like, yeah, be easy on the kid. And I'm like, okay, there is nothing in this letter that does not reek of being condescending. It's Gizmodo clearly stating to Apple, yeah, we're in the superior position here, and we know that you can't really do anything to us, especially because we're going to give you the phone, and the damage has already been done. So we win.
So what upsets you so much about this? Just the, I guess, the arrogance of Gizmodo, or...
Here's what upsets me. That's a good question. First of all, Gizmodo, in my personal opinion, has kind of pushed the limits of good taste and professionalism in their reporting for a few years now. Now, they break good stories, but the way in which they do it, in my personal opinion, they are lacking in some scruples. And I feel like this is another example. First of all, I feel that the letter back to Apple was very childish and immature and unprofessional and very snarky. And the other thing is, the guy who found the phone apparently did not contact Apple. And it says Apple all over it. And, you know, maybe it is a fake, but you contact Apple and you find out.
And apparently this bar is not very far from Apple's campus.
Yeah, yeah.
So he could have driven to Apple easier than he could have contacted Engadget or Gizmodo.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Well, heck, he probably could have driven to Apple easier than he could contact them via email. So, I mean, hunting down the right person to contact, they probably just could have driven up to the door. And
oh, yeah.
Now, well, here's the other thing. He did not even contact the owner or any employees of the bar and said, hey, you know, I was in here last night and somebody left this here. I found it on the floor and, you know, I took it home. Maybe I shouldn't have. But anyway, here it is. He didn't ask anybody right then when he found it either. He just, oh my gosh, this is like a new iPhone, and he runs off with it and starts contacting the press.
I heard contrary. I heard the guy who found it waited a while, a significant amount of time for the guy to come back and get it.
And well, that's what I read. The bar apparently
are saying that they're running around out there, but
yeah. Okay, so let's be fair then. You know, I'm hearing one side of the story. There could be multiple different versions of the story.
Right.
But what I've heard is that nobody in the establishment had ever been contacted about the fact that somebody had found a phone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the guy might have waited there, but it's not like
if you find something, you can go to the bar and say, hey, somebody left this wallet here, or this phone here, or these car keys here.
Well, and the employee apparently was looking all over the place for it. And you got to think the way, I mean, Jeff, you know more about this than Lou or I do, but the way Apple is, especially when it comes to their products that are not yet released, I would imagine that this guy was like, I mean, that restaurant must have been the cleanest restaurant in the world by the time he got done with it. He would have been looking under every single coaster in the scuzziest parts of the bathroom. I mean, this guy would have searched high and low for this thing.
Well, I probably disagree.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, I mean, this is speculation right here.
Well, sure.
But I think probably what happened was the guy went out, got a little drunk, lost his phone, went home, didn't realize he didn't have it, and fell asleep or whatever. Woke up, realized he didn't have the phone, and Harry had no idea where he lost it. And at that point, that's when they initiated the remote wipe with Mobile Me.
Sure, yeah.
So because I don't know. I mean,
right.
Because
even if it was the next day and he went back to the bar and or other places that he might have visited the day before,
right. What he could have done was, you know, did the Find My iPhone on Mobile Me, realize that it was in some place that he never was,
in a way,
realized somebody had it, and at that point somebody has it, and you gotta bite the bullet,
right?
You gotta start preparing for that.
Yeah,
yeah, that could not have been an easy conversation with your boss.
Well, yeah, what I don't understand is, I mean, obviously to be able to have the authority in Apple to remove a prototype product from the premises.
Yeah.
I mean, that is high end authority. Okay.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that was like nuclear missile code security type stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's like stock options level kind of executive. So
my understanding, this guy was in his mid-20s.
Yeah, this is an engineer or something like that. So I was very surprised, I guess, when I saw the profile of this guy. I'm like, wow, dude, you really messed up here. But
yeah.
I mean, now, sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying, you know, part of me saying at the same time, is this really the truth? Is this really a prototype iPhone? Was it something that they've already abandoned? Was it something Apple's trying to plant to get more publicity out of the story? I mean, I don't know. I mean, you've worked for Apple, Jeff. I mean, you would know better than I would, but it doesn't seem like it doesn't add up to what we normally hear about Apple security.
Yeah, I would imagine another company, I could see them doing that sort of thing. And like a lot of television studios have leaked pilots for their shows to the internet before. And oops, we didn't mean to release that. No, honest, we didn't. Here's the link. You know, but Apple doesn't do that. And Apple doesn't need that. That's the thing. They don't really benefit any from having that out. As a matter of fact, their stocks went down a little bit. When all of this came out, they came right back up. It wasn't a big deal. Mm. But I mean, this is a type of thing that everybody gets all worked up for the big Apple announcement every time they do this, every June when they announce the new hardware. And, you know, we just got done with the iPhone 4.0 operating system. And, you know, that's where Apple gets all of the media attention for. So leaking something intentionally doesn't really fit them.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any scenario. Not any scenario. I think it's highly, highly unlikely that this was a planned drop.
Yeah.
I think more likely is that they were in very final production. They were in, you know, release candidate, whatever you want to call it, and they were probably doing some exterior of the building field tests.
Right.
Because it looks like, you know, the form factors changed, the materials have changed, and I think they just want to make sure that they get it out of the building a little bit. And so,
which is something that Apple's been criticized for before, about like things not working. Oh, one of the first things that was said when people couldn't charge their iPads connected to their Windows machines, it's like, oh well, Apple doesn't test it with, you know, anything but their own hardware and their own little closed environment.
Well, I don't believe that for a second.
I agree, but it's a type of thing that we hear about all the time from Apple and or from critics of Apple rather. And so, you know, it wouldn't surprise me that they actually do test things like, you know, connectivity outside of their own buildings and outside of their own Wi-Fi networks and
yeah, things like that. Because this thing was obviously meant to be taken outside of the building because it had a camouflage case on it. It had a case on it specifically designed for this phone, but to make it look like a 3G phone. And right. So this was something, an in-house tool. And so I think if you're going to intentionally take this and drop this somewhere, you don't go to the trouble of manufacturing a camouflage case for it.
Right.
Because the bartender could have found it, thought, oh, here's an iPhone. I'll put it in the box here and I'll wait.
Right.
I mean, but if you want to drop a prototype phone, you need to know instantly pretty much this is not like the others.
Right. Exactly. That's a
good point.
Yeah. And you know, the point you made earlier, Eric, is that Apple controls this information for a reason. And having been at Apple headquarters and having, you know, worked for Apple and been there, and it's no joke. You know, one of the fastest ways you can get fired is to try your badge in places you know you shouldn't be. You know, if you know you shouldn't be in a place, don't go try to badge into a door. Because security will come find you and ask you why you're trying to get into that room.
Yeah.
So it's not does it work here? Does it work here?
It's
does
a
it
common
work
sense
here?
Thing. Right.
So.
Well, you know, back to your question about my thoughts on Gizmodo about this. I guess it just boils down to the fact that I feel like regardless of what legal loopholes they're standing behind, they knew better. They knew this belonged to Apple, or at least they had good reason to believe it did. And given the timeline, I think that they waited until they could tear it apart, they could put some pictures up on the internet, and then they started getting with Apple to see about maybe giving it back to them, or at least getting Apple to fess up to the fact that it was real. And really, that's what they wanted out of the communication with Apple, is just a confession that, yes, this is the real thing. And it also, you know, it smacks of them trying to get a story before anybody else. And I'm okay with it. I understand from, you know, a business point of view, that's what Gizmodo wants to do. I just think there are, you know, legitimate ways of doing it that doesn't equate to, you know, paying $5,000 for something that they know that somebody else accidentally dropped and doesn't really belong to them. I mean, they're buying something that they had reason to believe really was Apple's and they should not be purchasing.
I totally understand, and I totally am in line, I think, with the vibe of what you're saying, that it's a little bit fishy. It's not quite on the up and up, and it just seems like this kind of story kind of fell into your lap, and and it's a little bit sketchy how you got in the first. Really wanted to run with it. However, I think any journalist is going to debate you the kind of, you know, have a right to our readers and their subscribers or whatever, that, you know, this story came to them. They didn't break in and steal the phone. And I think they have a right, once they have it, to report on it. It's a highly, highly sought after story. And two, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm being whiny. I agree with you. You're absolutely correct. And not just in the fact that that's how the real world works, but even legally, right, that's how it works. I'm not trying to imply that Gizmodo broke the law.
I would be interested to know what would have happened had Gizmodo gone to Apple and said, hey, we've got this. Okay. We know it's real. All right. All I have to do is send this email and I'm going to have this up on our site right now. Or we can give it to you. Hold a story. What are you going to do for us?
Yeah.
We want an exclusive with Steve Jobs. We want an exclusive with, you know, Johnny Ives or whatever.
Yeah.
We want something. And I think there could have been a way. I don't know. There could have been something there that may have helped them out in the future. But you can guarantee now, and Gizmodo is on Apple's crap list.
Oh, heck yeah.
And that's not a good place to be.
No, it's because
they were thrown out of a press conference one time, weren't they? Weren't they filming something and said they were never going to be invited back again?
I haven't heard that.
I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me. Given
I thought I heard like a year ago that they were caught sending out a live stream. Not that everybody else doesn't do it now, but you know, live streaming one of the Apple keynote events, and they were not going to be invited back.
Well, people don't live stream them though; they generally live blog them.
Right, I've seen them live streamed
recently.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. My bad.
Yeah, like on Ustream. Somebody's running their like MacBook Pro webcam or something like that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to start looking for those from now on when I post stuff. They got a little mirror periscope thing. Yeah. Hmm. All right. Well, let's talk about the specs a little bit. One of you guys wanna take this?
Sure. You guys the screen resolution has been increased. We're going to get a much higher res screen. I'm not sure if it's going to be high def or not, but definitely a better looking screen. And mm-hmm. we knew that was coming. I had to keep up with all the other Android phones coming out.
And that's really been another big point of contention when comparing the iPhone to other phones. All I hear all the time, well, Nexus One has a better resolution and Android has a better resolution. And I'm like, well, yeah, okay, but it's not all about that.
Right.
But now they can keep up.
Yeah, but you know, I look at my iPhone, I'm like, okay, it's pretty good from where I'm sitting here, so does it really need to be much better? I mean, I want it to be better, but it's not a reason not to buy one, I don't think.
Yeah, but it will be nice to have, you know, double the resolution.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll be one of those things that once you see it, you're going to be like, wow, this is probably very nice.
How did I live with the other one?
Yeah.
Exactly.
How can I convince my wife to take my old 3GS?
Yeah.
I'm already working on that one.
Me too. better camera. We've been talking about that for a couple of years now. They have this little tiny little camera there with, you know, what, 2 megapixels, and everybody else is, you know, what, 8 or 12. So they're getting better camera and LED flash, I guess, surrounding the camera. So be able to take some pictures in darker situations.
That would be nice.
The phone has a front facing camera, so we can all do that wonderful video chat we all talked about.
Not going to happen. Not gonna happen.
This is a different conversation, but I don't understand the fascination with that. But whatever.
I don't either. Yeah.
Yeah.
Moving right along, they're going to have a second microphone in the machine, which will do noise canceling. You know, sample from both mics and cancel out anything that's not your voice.
Yeah. Now, do we know that for sure?
We don't. But the placement of it, I think it's up near the earpiece somewhere, and
which is also near the front-facing camera. Because couldn't that be a voice conferencing microphone?
But couldn't it also serve a dual purpose?
Sure. I'm just saying, I mean, absolutely.
No, you're right.
I think, though, that it's, in my gut reaction, is it's less likely a noise-canceling microphone and more likely a very directional microphone for voice chatting.
You know, I have heard from 6 or 7 different places speculation that it would be a noise-cancellation microphone based on things they've seen in other phones. However, while it's the first time I've heard it, I think your explanation probably makes more sense.
And that's what I strive for in life.
That's why we have you here. It's certainly not because you have an iPad and I don't.
That's true.
Yeah.
Because I'm prettier than you are.
Well, probably that too. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, but the thing is, that's a good point. It could be for the chat, but if they wanted to, they're going to have a microphone at the top, a microphone at the bottom. It's an issue of software, really, to be able to use one or the other for noise cancellation.
I would be interested to know what the battery hit is on that.
Hmm.
It would be, yeah, you true. Know, because active noise canceling, I'm just curious if there's a latency issue, all kinds of issues yeah. there.
Well, that's a good question, because apparently it has a larger battery.
That's true. Which would be very welcomed.
Yeah, we could be looking at similar to what we saw with the new MacBook Pro releases, and with the iPad, we could be looking at like a 10-hour battery life type of functionality.
And if it's anything like the iPad has an awesome battery life. It's amazing this thing goes for as long as it does, doing all that it does.
That's what everyone's saying. I can't wait.
It's you know absolutely what's gonna, ridiculous.
You know what's going to anger people, though, is... If it's going to be so good on the iPhone, they're getting used to that, and they're not going to charge it for 3 or 4 days at a time. And when it does get depleted and they go to charge it, if it takes as long to charge as the iPad does, people are going to go nuts because they're not used to that.
Mm. Yeah, and, it's got to be able to charge overnight for you, though. I mean, I'm used to dropping mine in the cradle every night and charging by morning.
I'm an overnight charger, so I don't really notice that.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as that stayed the same, I'd be okay with that.
I'm going to have such a hard time with my iPad too, because I'm going to have, I'm going to go all over the house and be cranky about the fact that I don't have a dock for it. I'm going to have a dock at my desk so it can sync with my computer and I can have it here on the desk, you know, upright. And then I want to be able to have a dock somewhere near where I'm out in the living room with Nicholas so that I can have it upright and either type with a wireless keyboard or watch Hulu or Netflix on it. And then I'm going to want one in the bedroom so I can charge it overnight but still have access to it if I wake up in the middle of the night, can't sleep, and want to read a book or something.
You are really needy.
I am.
I would do this. I would not buy your docks first unless you already have, in which case keep them.
But. No. I bought one. I know I want at least one, because if for no other reason, not only am I going to want to be able to easily sync it at the computer and have it upright on my desk somehow, but I'm going to take it to school along with a wireless Bluetooth keyboard, and I need something that I can prop it up on the desk with. And I know there are other solutions, like, you know, some people are using business card holders and stuff like that, and that might be fine at school, but point is, I do need to have some way to stand it upright. So I got one of the cheap $29 docks.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just curious if a solution that with, you know, like Apple's case with a, that kind of stands on its own, wouldn't be better for you. That way you can just take the stand with you very easily.
Probably, but
and to then that, I'm interested be able, to see well, how you feel about it once you carry it around for a while, and if you really do always want to have it in a stand versus holding it or whatever.
Yeah, I probably won't. I think the case will work. I've heard a lot of bad things about the Apple branded case. I'm anxious to try it out. My main concern with the case is going to be whether or not I can put it in the dock to sync it while it's in the case.
You cannot.
You cannot.
You cannot.
That's why I hate cases on almost any device. You can't drop it into the cradle. It's like I want to put a case on my iPhone. I want to protect it, but I don't want to have to take it off every time I put it in the cradle.
And I'm too paranoid about the device to not put it in a case. Well, here's what I've got with my iPhone. You know the old iPod docks,
right?
Where you had to replace the little the
universal docks.
Yeah, the universal docks. So I have it. So there's no plastic. I don't even know what those things are called. The little adapters you plug in to fit for the different types.
Yeah, the insert.
Yeah. So I don't have any insert in it at all, and I've got my iPhone in a case. And yeah, I get the little annoying message every time I put it in saying it's not designed for use with an iPhone. Do you want to go into airplane mode? Yes or no? And I just ignore it and it goes away after 2 or 3 seconds. But that way I can leave it in the case and still use the dock. And I've got all of my old iPod docks that I've collected and amassed over the years. And so I've got, you know, docks anywhere I want to have it. I don't have one of the actual iPhone docks because you can't put it in with a case unless you're going to take like a Dremel tool and grind the plastic down.
Well, there are two things. One, there are certain cases now, a lot of cases have the ability, like the in-case slider, the bottom end of it pops off really easily and you dock it and then you put it back on.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good looking, pretty sturdy case, and I think actually a pretty good compromise. The other thing, and I've done the same thing. I have an old iPod video dock that you could do essentially the same thing you're doing. And the only problem with that is, of course, it's just putting a lot of strain on that 30-pin dock connector. And
I mean, that's always been my worry.
And if something happens, if you accidentally knock it, all of that stress goes right on that joint, on that dock, and not on the surrounding, you know, plastic or whatever, if it was in an official dock.
That is true. Now, I'm kind of OCD, so I don't have anything else around it on my desk. But that, you know, that's true. I've not had a problem with it as far as just normal wear and tear in that regard. But if I were to knock it with something and push it and bend it over, you know, I could be damaging the phone. That's very true. So, I mean, this is not an ideal solution, but
yeah. I agree. I think that I would love to put a case on my iPad. I'm waiting to buy a case until, I don't know, I just find the one I want.
So basically, I've got two accessories that are not mutually, they're not compatible.
Right.
So I need to be using one or the other, and I need to return one.
Right. You need to send one to me. That's what you need.
Oh.
Yeah. I'll gladly take the case.
Well, you know, if you find out anything about other cases, I would be very interested. That, and I'm thinking about getting a screen protector for it.
Yeah, I've considered like a matte finish screen protector. You know, the screen is the same as the iPhone in the sense that it's very extremely mysteriously so scratch resistant. So I'm not worried about scratches. It is, I think, a lot more of a fingerprint magnet than the iPhone is.
Yeah.
It's a lot more akin to the first gen iPhone, and the fingerprints kind of just can be a lot more annoying, I think, than they are with it. Once they switch to that new screen finish on the 3G or 3GS or whichever it was, this just has a lot, and I'm constantly wiping it down.
Yeah, and I'm really worried about that because, again, I'm kind of OCD, and sometimes that's a good thing, and sometimes it's bad, and those fingerprints are going to drive me insane.
Yeah, the only screen protector I found for it, though, is just a straight matte finish film. It was like $30. And that's ridiculous.
I found a few, but yeah, they all range from about 20 to 35.
That's ridiculous. Wow. That's absolute robbery. Well, I refuse to pay that for that.
If you get some dust underneath it or something, if you put it on wrong the first time.
Yeah, you've got to
crumple
be
it up, throw it away,
on.
Buy a new one.
Good luck.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm going to wait to see if I can find a cheaper solution for that, because that's ridiculous. Yeah. That's just day one price gouging is what it is.
You know, I'm really feeling better and better about my decision to wait until version 2, because all these problems will be solved.
I know.
You guys are going to complain and they're going to fix it.
Well,
the case dock problem has been around since the iPhone.
Yeah, that one, maybe not. I think the screen issue might get resolved somehow. But yeah, the dock and the cradle and all that, I think you're just going to be stuck. I guess I'm a little bit surprised that Apple is releasing an Apple case and Apple has an Apple dock, but they designed it in such a way that you can't use one with the other. I understand like Apple not supporting third party cases in the iPhone docks because they're third party and that's not Apple's problem. But I would think that with the case, they would have like done something to cut the case in such a way that it would still fit in the dock or vice versa. That just seems. Well, so I bought the two accessories I care the most about, and now I've got to make a decision between which one I'm going to use and which one I'm not going to use. And honestly, because there are other alternatives you can do for not really a dock per se, but to prop the iPod upright, between the case or there are, you know, the, like I said, the business card holders, or you can go down to Staples and get all kinds of different office supply type things that'll prop it up. And people have got all kinds of creative things on the internet, but I'd rather use one of those, plug the cord into the bottom of it and be able to have it in a case. So now this dock that I just paid $30 for, have never used, is all but worthless.
Well, I just think it depends. I mean, I think Apple is simplistic and straightforward in a lot of ways, and that includes their product line. And I think to have a dock that's for non-cases, and then to have another dock that's just for the Apple case, I think is very confusing.
No, I agree.
And it's not like you mold and like glue the case to the iPad. You can take it out. and sync it.
Well,
does it come out easily though?
I've heard it. You know, it's yes and no. It's a tight fit, but it's not. You know, like I said, you know.
You know what? Looking at this dock, I've got it here in my hands. I've taken it out of the box. It's still got all the plastic protectors on it, though. The width that you would have to make the hole in the case, you could totally have cut the case in such a way to leave that little, just that little part exposed in the back. And, you know, 99.7% of the iPad would still be protected by the case and it would still fit the dock. That's what I don't understand, why they didn't just cut the case a little bit differently. Yeah. To make one of their own products work with one of their own products in a way that is intuitive and makes sense. You've got a device, they offer a protective case, and then a dock for you to place it in. That's what I'm saying. For Apple, it seems out of character for them to create these things that you can do with a particular device, but you have to choose between one or the other.
I would like to see the return of the universal dock. Is what I would like. I'd like to be able to buy the Apple case and get an insert for it, and be good to go.
Why do I need two docks on my desk? Connectors. Yeah. Why can't I put my iPhone and my iPad in the same dock?
Yeah, I agree. That's a little bit.
I don't know.
I'd like a little bit more functionality and a little less form in that particular area.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe with. Well, no, actually, looking at the hardware from this upcoming iPhone, I'm not sure that it's going to fit in the dock either, because it looks like the pin, the connector is actually a little closer to the back of the plastic. That's another thing. The case on this new iPhone is not curved around the back like the iPhone 3G, 3GS, etc. It looks more like a distant cousin of one of the aluminum body MacBooks. It's got a thin aluminum band around the side.
It's a smaller iPad.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And then the back is ceramic.
Yeah, it's black, unlike the iPad.
Yeah. And I guess the ceramic in the back is for, I assume, either for heat dissipation or for a reduction in wireless interference, because of course wireless signals will travel easier through ceramic than they would like something like metal,
aluminum. I think aluminum. It's definitely B. I think it's the wireless interference, because we, you know, one of the complaints about the iPad has been that its Wi-Fi range is not really particularly good, and that's because you have a big, huge wireless resistor in that aluminum back.
Have you had problems with that personally?
I haven't had problems with it though. I mean, I've noticed that I'll be, you know, in my other room in my house, you know, right across the hall from my router, and I'll have like one bar. I haven't experienced it drop out, anything like that, but it would not surprise me if I was in an area where I was only going to get moderate reception. If I bring out the iPad and not get barely any, I kind of expect that at some point to happen, and that will be unfortunate, but I can see why they didn't go with aluminum on this 4G iPhone, because that's going to be pretty tough.
Yeah.
You know,
I know this isn't really part of the review, but and I haven't not having seen one, it's hard to say. But I'm not real crazy about the design.
Really?
It looks like every other Android phone out there. It looks like all these other, you know, HTC handsets you see coming out every other week.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about it.
I'm not sure. I don't know. From the pictures.
Here's one of those things that I'll say that yes, on the one hand, I agree. But this is how I felt about the iPad and really the iPhone when it first. I thought the iPhone when it first came out. I was like, wow, that's kind of ugly. I didn't really like it at first glance because the front of it was just obviously this big black screen. I didn't really get it at the time. And you know, the iPad, I thought, well, I kind of like it. I don't really know. And I wanted to see it and play with it. I think that once you see it and play with it, it's going to feel better in your hand. And two, I think that it's going to be thinner than any of those other phones out there. And I liked it wrapped in the edges on aluminum. I like in that kind of squared off, little bezel. I think it's a real clean, crisp look, personally.
I'm
have to see it.
On the fence. I didn't like it at first. It kind of grew on me a little bit and I guess I'm kind of ambivalent toward it. I could take it or leave it.
Yeah, I was never really a big fan of the curved back. I felt like the curved back was kind of, we need to make it feel thinner, and this is the only way we can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I don't care about thin phones that much. I don't want them to be too bulky, but I'd like there to be some heft in them. I want to make sure that I know that I'm holding it, and it's not about to slip out of my hand, or I don't loosen my hand up too much on it and drop it.
Yeah. Well, see, I think this phone's going to give you that. I think it's going to be thinner, but feel better because of the square edges. I think it's going to. I think it's going to fit better in your hand than the previous models.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know that I like the look so much, but I think I will probably like the feel better. I don't know.
Time will tell.
Yeah.
Lou
will be able to get one because the rest of us have dumped all our money on iPads, and come this summer, he'll be the only one with a new phone. Yeah.
I was going to say, speaking of heft, I got to play with an iPad in Best Buy over the weekend. And, you know, I probably spent way too much time
playing Lou, you're fired.
Zombies.
What? You're fired. You are fired. Go away.
He just played with one in Best Buy. You've played with one in, like, a Best Buy or Apple Store, haven't you?
No, I haven't. The Best Buy is out here. I moved out in the middle of nowhere, dude. I moved away from one of the biggest cities in the country to, like, an hour and a half away. And I'm out. Okay, you know what? Let me move the window. Okay, it's dark outside, so I can't see it. But there's a cow right on that hill. I kid you not. I'm in the middle of nowhere. The Best Buys here don't have them. They're probably not going to get them for quite a while. I've almost had an opportunity to make it into an Apple store when I go back into town, so to speak, into the city for college. I haven't stopped by an Apple store yet to play with one. I've got a case.
So are you sure that FedEx delivers to your house? Are you sure that they're going to come out there? Yeah, they're going to need to drop it off via carrier pigeon or something?
Or I'm going to be breaking down their doors when they close it next Friday and ask to speak to their manager, demand to speak to their manager.
There you go.
Yeah, it's going to be messy. But anyway, well, I'm sorry,
that
Lou.
It was heavier than I thought. And holding it in one hand and playing Plants vs. Zombies for a few minutes, well, 10, 15 minutes, get away, little kid, I'm playing. It felt heavy, and I was like, I got to work on my arm strength here because standing up and holding it was not the same experience as the iPhone.
A lot of people have said that.
Yeah, it's heavier than you think it is.
Yeah,
when you first grab it. And at times that really doesn't matter, and at times it's like, wow, this kind of wears on you a little bit. But you'll definitely kind of want to get to the point. Like last night, I was playing with it, and I was sitting on my couch, and I got a pillow and set that on my lap, then set the iPad on the pillow, and because it got I got a little tired of holding it after a while.
Yeah, I've heard of a lot of people. They end up using it on their laps more often, or they'll cradle it in one arm while they type with it in the other arm.
Yeah.
It's apparently heavier than people think, and apparently it's all the battery, or the batteries. I guess I technically there's two batteries in it, right?
I hadn't heard that.
That's what I've heard. I don't know if that's true, but all right. Well, let's talk some apps and get off of the iPad thing. We talk about the iPhone hardware, and of course we delve right into iPad once again.
It's like a black hole.
It
is. We're sorry.
I get sucked in every time. All right, so let's talk some apps. Lou, what do you have this week as far as anything you've come across that's interesting?
I came across an app called iRecycle. Today we're recording on Earth Day, so I figured we'd do something green. And came across this iRecycle app, which kind of fits in with some stuff I need to do at work, too. We tend to go through hardware and batteries and so forth quite a bit, and where do you get rid of the stuff? This app lets you search for locations across the country based on your location. And I think it's got like a database of 11,000 or maybe it was 110,000 different locations for recycling. And it will give you information about each location. It will tell you what they accept, what kind of stuff they can take in, if they resell it or what they do with it. It'll also give you directions. You can call right from the app to call them, find out their hours and so forth if it's not listed on the app. They also evidently give you a way to track events in your area. Evidently, Connecticut doesn't recycle very much because there was no events around me, so I really couldn't judge what that functionality was. But the app is pretty slick because we've got a couple batteries from UPS backup systems we had to get rid of, and I had no idea where to do with them. I didn't want to put them in a landfill. So
right.
This one told me that Radio Shack recycles them, and I was on my way down there.
Oh, cool.
So the app's free, and I think anything we can do to help save Mother Earth is a good thing.
That's kind of cool. I came across something this week, and this is not my pick for this week, but it's also related to recycling and green, and it's called Chaos Rings. And it's related to being green because it costs $13.
Ooh,
and
a lot
so
of green.
You are recycling your money back into the
economy.
Exactly, into the economy.
Yes.
Exactly.
The ultimate
and your money is green
heap.
If you're in the US. Okay, that was pretty lame. Anyway, and this is kind of newsworthy, which is why we're kind of covering it here instead of in the picks. But so there's been a lot of press in the last few days on those blogs that have new app information. And Chaos Rings is made by Square Enix, again, the people that make Final Fantasy. And I don't know if it's the most expensive game in the App Store, but if not, it's got to be close. $13? $12.99? That's a lot.
Not for a game.
Yeah. I mean, not for like a console game or a PC game, but for an iPhone game, that's kind of pushing it. I tried to contact Square Enix to see if I could get a promo code, and I keep getting messages back from Gmail saying, well, the email still didn't go through, but we're going to try for one more day and see if we get a response. I can't even hit their mail servers. I don't know what's going on. But anyway, so I did a lot of investigating to see whether or not I really should do it. And I looked at my bank account and I realized probably not, but I did it anyway. I bought it.
Such an American thing to do.
Yeah, well, like, I'm supporting the economy. Yeah, I got to make sure there's still enough in my bank account to get that iPad.
That's true.
You know, they put a hold on the money. Apple does, so it looks like it's out of my bank account, and then 2 or 3 days later, it's back in, and then they put a hold on it again.
Wouldn't that be the worst if you bought this app and then they went to pull the money out for the iPad and it wasn't there and they canceled his order?
Dude, I panicked because the day that they said that the new orders were May 7th, I looked and they were taking the money out or putting a hold on it. I thought they were taking the money out, but they didn't. And this is in like a second account of ours. This isn't like our main account, and like two other things went through that I didn't know, and I was $4 short.
Oh, no.
I just lost it. Now, we have it set up so it automatically transferred in from a backup account, so everything was fine. But like for a split second there, I'm like, oh, my gosh. We should have taken this out of the main account or done something different. I'm going to lose my iPad now. But they need to, if they're going to take the money out, leave it out. Take it. It's fine. Take it now and just send me the iPad when it's ready. And don't keep, now we're going to give it back. Now we're going to take it. Now we're going to give it back.
It's like they're doing a hokey pokey with your money.
Yeah. Anyway, but I digress. So I did pick it up. And I got to say that this is the best RPG I've seen yet on the iPhone store. There aren't a lot of RPGs out there. And the ones I've seen have been mainly kind of the old school Japanese RPG, like the old original Final Fantasy type of things, where it's kind of tile based and you got the goofy little cartoony characters and stuff. This is very much like a modern Final Fantasy. This is kind of like the Final Fantasy 13, Final Fantasy 10, that sort of thing. It's got graphics similar to, I would say, maybe one of the old PS2 games, which isn't bad.
Yeah, no, not at all.
And the feel of the game is very much like a more modern Final Fantasy. And I gotta say, I picked up Final Fantasy 13 on my Xbox, and I'm more interested in playing this. And it has nothing to do with the fact that it's on an Apple device or it's an iPhone or it's portable or anything like that. It's just that the premise behind this game is more interesting to me, and the characters. I don't know if the characters are more interesting, but holy cow, the ones on the Xbox game are annoying. It's one of the worst character designs, not visually, but like personality wise, I just get annoyed. I want to strangle half of my party all the time. It's pretty sad. But anyway, this was it's pretty good. The premise is that you can choose between one of four pairs of characters. At first, you can only choose between two pair. And it's one of these things where you kind of wake up and you've been kidnapped. You wake up in a group with the other pairs of characters. You don't know how you got there. There's some big, like a mysterious alien-like being or something who says that you're all there for like an arena combat type of thing. But it's not just an arena combat game. You have to travel through this. It's almost like a prefabricated world. Like they constructed this world, like an arena world type of thing for you to play on. So you move around like you would in a normal Final Fantasy map, and you've got the little pathways and stuff, and you have random encounters out in the world, and you're trying to find these rings. And then I guess later on, you're actually going to have to battle against these other groups who don't really want to battle you, but if they don't, they're going to be killed off. And there's more to the story than that. The cool thing is you can replay as any one of these pair. So after you complete the game, you can complete the game three more times with unique situations and unique stories based on these other characters. So there's some replay value. If you complete the story, apparently, and of course I've not gotten this far yet, but apparently if you complete it with any particular pair of characters, you can then replay it with those and like go in a further number of levels. And there's other extras that are in the game that you can unlock a second time through. So it looks like there's a lot of replay. The control system is awesome. So it's kind of like an analog control stick, like what you would have with a dual stick game or something like that, but it's not stationary in the lower left hand corner. Basically, wherever you tap your finger or your thumb or whatever, wherever you tap it, that's where the joystick's going to be. And you move it in any direction. Of course, if you move it a little bit, you walk. If you move it a lot, you run. And when you let go, it disappears until the next time you've put your finger somewhere on the screen. So if you want to play with your thumbs, you can. Or, you know, if your thumbs get tired and you want to hold it with your left hand and just take your finger with your right hand and drag your character around, you can do that. And it seems like a simple difference, but I think it made a lot of difference in the way the game handles. I would really like to see other RPGs and other maybe dual stick games or something like that use something similar to this. So the control system's great. Combat system is kind of a turn-based type of thing, like is standard for Final Fantasy games. The magic system's okay. It's not, you know, revolutionary like Final Fantasy VII was, but it's, you know, it's certainly just as good as anything else on an iPhone game. It's painful in that it's $12.99. It's hard to recommend it. But if you're looking for a Final Fantasy type of game on the iPhone, I think that once you get past the first couple of days, you're going to forget the fact that you paid $13 for it unless you go and brag to your friends or something. But that part is going to go away and you're just going to be involved in the game itself, and I think you're going to enjoy it. So it's a rough recommendation to make given the price, but I think it's worth the $13, believe it or not.
All right.
That's my story. Yeah. And I'm sticking to it.
Okay. Very good. All right.
So, Jeff, I know that I kind of popped the question to you kind of just recently, I think just yesterday, about whether you want to officially come on as a permanent host. Because, of course, I couldn't have you on as a guest.
That's right.
With your iPad situation there. So I don't know if you had anything prepared to discuss on the show or not. If not, we forgive you.
Are we just talking about a pick, or are we just talking about in general
an app? Well, just anything you've come across maybe that's interesting, or if you want, we can move on to the picks. I think we're running a little bit long in this episode now, so...
Well, I mean, quick, and unfortunately, mine's going to be iPad-specific, because one of the side effects about having the iPad is that I've used my iPhone way less. And so I'm like, oh, yeah, I've got this cute little iPhone over here. It's so small. Look at the back of my pocket.
It's my iPad Nano.
Yeah, it really makes your iPhone feel tiny. It's kind of weird. I would just say that I've never been a comic book reader. I've always wanted to be, I mean, I love superhero stories and things like that. I've always been a big Batman fan. And, but then I picked up the Marvel app for the iPad, and, that is absolutely awesome. I know this is not new news, but, just the experience of reading a comic book on the iPad with the Marvel app is just phenomenal. And I've bought like 7 or 8 comics on this thing so far, and so
nice.
Really, I think I'm gonna start tracking a couple series on it and then picking those up. So, would love to have a DC app,
DC no comics kidding. App,
so I could get me some Batman and some maybe some Superman stuff. But, you know, they have a couple new. I didn't know that Joss Whedon did an X-Men series. How did I not know this? And so I'm reading that now, and cool. So yeah, that's just kind of my I mean, that's just it's a killer app for me for the iPhone. It's Marvel.
Yeah. Nice. You know, honestly, it's not that bad on the iPhone.
Yeah, I got it for the iPhone, and then I downloaded one of my comics to it, and it's okay. I can definitely see they really use the space they have very well. But I mean, you're talking about comparing, you know, a Ford Taurus to a Ferrari when it comes to the presentation here.
But if you don't have an iPad and you have an iPhone and you're interested in comics, I still think it's worth picking up.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Specifically because, yeah, I mean, it's a great way to get access to all that catalog. And what was intimidating to me about starting to read comic books was the experience of going to the store, looking through all that inventory, having any idea what series was what, where to start, where to end. I had no clue. And so, you know, it just was prohibitive for me. And so I think even if you only have an iPhone, you can still get it for the iPhone, still start to look and still start. And if you ever decide to get an iPad, you can download those comics again right to the iPad.
Which now, the thing is, well, first of all, like you said, you can download you can download to either the iPad or the iPhone because it's based on an account.
Right.
So if you've got two different devices, you can still share the comics you have on them. And you can delete them from the device if they're taking up too much space, and you can always re-download them later. The app is free. The comics are generally $1.99 a piece.
Yep.
And a lot of people kind of freaked out about that. Oh, this isn't really free. You got to pay for the comics. Well, if you go to a comic book store, comics these days average like $2.99. So it's actually cheaper to get them here.
I didn't feel jipped by that at all. I think
I
think honestly, if you think you're going to download a free Marvel app and have and get to read all their comics, I think you need to check your expectations.
I don't think
that's on Marvel. I think that's on you.
Somehow that doesn't seem like a good business model for them.
Probably
not.
That's not gonna work.
And I'll have to say, you know, being Earth Day, hey, downloading is much more green than buying a paper comic.
True.
It really is. And all joking aside, that's kind of a big deal. I had a period of time right around college where I collected a lot of comic books, and you know those long white boxes, they just call them long boxes, but those white comic book boxes where, you know, you put like a few billion comics in them. I've got about 10 of those in my attic right now that I don't want to just throw away, and yet I've been moving them from place to place to place for well over a decade now, and I'm tired of moving them. Nothing.
You should stack them on top of each other and then put a tablecloth on it and use it as a table.
I should. I really should. They're heavy. They're sturdy.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I'm tired of moving them. You don't want to throw them away because, you know, there's some good stories in there, and they're not worth anything because there's no aftermarket anymore. And, you know, I won't get into the whole explanation of why that is. And I'm loving this app. Now, the thing is, now I haven't read comic books in long enough that this doesn't affect me. But I don't think there are any episodes more recent than like within the last year or two. So if you're an avid comic book subscriber anyway, you're only looking at, I mean, you're looking at stuff from like, they go back to, I think they've got the original X-Men and the original Fantastic Four in there. So I guess technically the 50s. But most of the stuff ranges generally from about 2000 to 2007.
Yeah, there's some 2008 titles in there on occasion. And that's one thing I was like, huh, there's no real new stuff in here. And so that I think is going to, I think once I kind of run out of stuff that, you know, is kind of the older stuff that I want to catch up on, and I want some new stuff, I think that maybe would be a little prohibitive. I haven't really researched why that is.
Yeah, it seems kind of strange.
Yeah.
Well, you think they'd want to be able to give you their newest stuff if you're going to transition to that as your main method of reading comics.
I mean, I could see you releasing it, you know, on delayed release, you know, 1 week, mm-hmm. 2 weeks, 30 days, you know, even a couple months afterwards.
Like DVDs.
But I don't see the point of holding it for a year.
Well, the short answer for that is that Marvel and DC, who don't even have an app at all, are they're holding on to their old business model. They still want to, both of them have said that they want to have digital comics migrate people over to the physical books. Like even Marvel said, you know, it's great that people like this, but we want to use this as a way to get people buying the real books. I think, though, that the response to this after the iPad release has been so much better than Marvel expected that this might convince them to take it a little more seriously. I got an email this past week. They've released something like 90 new issues this week alone. Hmm. And that's out of the ordinary for them. For those who don't know, the Marvel app just came out when the iPad was released, but it was around in a different form before that. There's a program out there called Comixology. And it's Comixology, and it is the Marvel app. The Marvel app basically is the Comixology app, but only for the Marvel publisher. But Comixology also has Dark Horse Comics. They've got Image Comics. They've got a bunch of independent publishers. And I've been getting Marvel comics on that program for the last several months. But it's odd that they would release 90 in 1 week. So that's a big jump. And I think that they're probably going to do more with this. And I'm hoping DC gets on board. But you know what? Between this and there are actually some others. Jeff, I'll shoot you an email. But if you want to check out IDW, they have an app. They do a lot of they've kind of remixed the G.I. Joe line and the Transformers line, the old school Transformers, not the Michael Bay stuff,
right?
But like the stuff that we grew up with, they're doing modern Transformers comics using the classic versions of those characters, and they're not bad. There's one called Panel Fly, there's Iverse, and there's some others. So maybe we should do an episode where we talk a little bit about that as a feature. And I think we can get Joe on from the Lost Chatter podcast because he both has an iPhone and is big into comic books. And
there we go. He can educate me on that.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right.
All right. So picks for this week. Was that your pick, Jeff, or do you have something else?
Yeah, real quick. I mean, this is going to be something that's, again, not really new, but just one of the things that I could kind of justify buying the iPad for was productivity. I'm self-employed. Mm-hmm. I do freelance video production, and so kind of staying organized and kind of staying focused is something that I kind of have to constantly stay on top of. Right. And so I bought I use Things for the Mac and Things for the iPhone, and so I went out pretty quickly to pick up Things for the iPad, and it's one of the more expensive apps. It's $19.99, but mm-hmm. it's really, really, really well done. It feels a lot like a native app. Very smooth, very nice. Love it. It's not that it's got particularly any new bells and whistles on it. It's pretty much more the same, but it's a very good move to the iPad. So that's really my pick. If you're into Things, if you use it, it's and if you've got an iPad, definitely worth picking it up.
Okay, I was waiting with bated breath with every word you said there, because I've been flip flopping back and forth for a couple of years now on my Mac between OmniFocus and Things, and I'm currently using Things. I've got Things on my iPhone. And I've been wondering how the iPad version is. It looks like it's better in the sense that it's got the stuff in the column on the left. It looks like you can navigate through it a little bit easier than you can on the iPhone. It looks closer to the desktop experience than the iPhone is.
Yeah, it really is. And they're still the great thing about, you know, Cultured Code, who's the company who makes Things, is they really have a great, I think, development timeline for it. I know they want to add over-the-air syncing for it. They want to add some nice things to it. But you know, the iPad version, it just feels native. It just feels very, very nice, very polished. It's extremely stable. And it's got all the features you'd expect it to have, and it's a nice blend of polish and functionality. And but yeah, it's it's very nice. I'm a big fan.
Interesting. It's going to be rough dropping $20 on it, but I imagine I will probably end up doing it because I really like things, and it's just it's so handy. I'm not self-employed, but you know I've got a very young son here at home, a 1-year-old, and I'm going to school, and so between juggling him and school and everything else, I find that often I have these little blocks of time that are kind of unexpected, and I need to be able to say, okay, what was it I needed to do?
Right.
And this, I can pull it out and say, okay, well, you know, I'm at home right now, so I can do these things, or I'm out running errands, I can do those things, and I can whittle away at different things within a short amount of time, as long as I'm keeping track of, you know, what it is I need to be doing and what resources I need to be doing that with. And I think Things is a great program. And it's probably going to be one of my first purchases for my iPad, probably right after Pages. So yeah.
That was one of those apps that I bought day one. I'm not sure. I may have bought that app before I actually had the iPad.
Yeah, I'm tempted. I'm holding out just in case I want a different accessory or something. But I guess I could return my iPad dock and get Things instead.
There you go.
See? Have another $10 for something else. That get works. Things and Pages. I'm really bitter about this dock thing now. Dude, you just ruined my day. That's so sad.
Sorry, I'm such a jerk. Man, you could take that $10 and get Plants vs. Zombies, which I think was made. I mean, I think
they may have not known it.
That game was destined for the iPad.
That app is so cool on the iPad.
It is gorgeous. It plays better than the iPhone version and the desktop version. It's awesome. It's got all the bells and whistles, too. It's got all the
mini games from the desktop. Yeah. I know. Between that and Field Runners, it's like, why can't they be universal apps? I've got to pay for Field Runners again. I've got to pay for Plants vs. Zombies again. I've got to pay for Things again. And I'm going to get Pages. So right there, that's 20, 30, 40, that's like $50. Yeah. Ouch. You know? But, oh well. I mean, most of the games and programs I want for the iPad are not that expensive. So,
and then you got to buy some e-books to read.
Well, you know, I've got some Kindle books already, and there's a Kindle app.
That's true. So, but you want to play with the iBooks app.
I do, but there's free stuff I can get. So I'm okay for a while. I'm doing all right. All right, Lou, cheer me up a little bit. What do you have that's going to take me off
move away
of this
from
iPad
productivity,
docs thing?
And I'm going to go into America's favorite pastime.
Ice cream.
It's no.
Professional bowling.
Oh, boy.
Touche. Jeff wins.
He's going downhill fast.
bowling? Because the ball rolls.
Baseball. The boys of summer.
Okay.
You know, you hit the ball, go around the bases.
Oh, yeah.
It's debatable whether or not that's still America's pastime, but
that's true. It's more like Japan's pastime, I guess, right? Yeah. Move on from that. That's not the point. Go ahead. Sorry. So my pick for this week is the MLB app. There's a light version, which I have, and there's a paid version, which is $14.99. Now, I guess if you had a lot of free time and you're a real big baseball fan, the $14.99 app is a very good one. It gives you in-game audio. You can, you know, get pitch-by-pitch stuff, which is nice. I don't have that much free time in my hand, so I just wanted to see score updates and schedules and standings, and that's what the MLB Lite app gives you, which is really nice, convenient. You pull it up anytime you want to. There's an iPad version, which is not sure the price isn't that tight truth, but I've heard it's even better because you can get live streaming video if you subscribe to it through MLB.com.
Nice.
Downside is it's $100 for the subscription to that.
Ooh.
Yeah, so
I guess if you're a
really
big
baseball
fan. Now, can you get like any games, or is it just like...
Yeah, it's any game for the entire season.
Well,
if you're a big baseball fan and you have the time, I think that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, from what I've heard about this app, I mean, I think it's the premier app for any professional sport. I'm a big NFL fan. And I wish the NFL had something like this.
I know, every fall I think that. Yep.
They don't have Diddly. No. And I just think that really MLB is just really doing some great work when it comes to this stuff because, I mean, it looks great. I mean, it's got killer features. An awesome killer app, I think.
And, you know, it's funny because I think back to like 10 years ago, I had a boss that had a pager style device with an LCD screen, and he could pull up any game he wanted to and see like the little dot for the guy in the base. And he thought that was so cool. And I flash forward to this and I'm going, you had no idea back then. It's like, this thing is just so much better. But yeah, so for a free app, it's professionally done, highly polished, and it gives you everything you'd want to know about baseball except for the live stuff, unless you pay for it.
Hmm. You know, it almost makes me wish I liked baseball.
Yeah.
No, seriously, I've seen the app, not in use, but I've seen a lot of screenshots of it, and a lot of people are talking about it. And, you know, I don't know, with all of the stats you get and all that, maybe I might pick it up anyway. Well, I mean, the free version, I'm not going to drop $100, but, you know, maybe. I might pick it up and maybe get the version that lets you get the live audio. And I don't know, I was into baseball as a kid, and I kind of got out of it, and I know nothing about the players or the teams or anything like that anymore. And, I mean, this really looks like not just professionally done, but professionally thought up. I mean, the concept behind, you know, how they did what they did, I'm pretty impressed with.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obvious that MLB has put a whole development team behind this. This is a priority for them. And I think, and I think, you know, baseball, the way it's set up in general, plays to this because there are so many games in a baseball season.
Yeah.
You know, like in the NFL, there are 16 games. Okay. You know, there's like 180 bajillion in a baseball season. I don't know. But you obviously cannot have the time to sit down and watch every single game. So you need to have a lot of this information a lot more mobile than you do with, the, you know, a 16-game NFL season. So I think that kind of the way that the baseball set up, it plays a lot more to this. But I think more than that, I think the MLB is really, I think, putting some resources into this. And I think that that's very cool.
Well, just all around, too. I mean, their overall internet presence, their online presence. I mean, they're really getting with – I think that if a lot of the television studios and the comic book publishers and things like that really embraced the digital era as well as MLB has –
yeah,
I think we'd be a lot further along.
Mm-hmm.
But
just point earlier, I really wish NFL and, you know, NBA and these others, you know,
NHL.
Yeah, NHL too, because they have a lot of games as well.
Yeah.
You know.
All right. Well, my pick for this week is a game called Marple. MARPLE. It is iPhone only, at least to my knowledge. I don't think there's an iPad version. And it is $1.99, but there's also a light version. This game's kind of hard to describe. It's kind of a logic puzzle game. And the idea is that you have clues, and you use these clues to eliminate possibilities until only one solution remains. And there's a timer, so, and there's leaderboards, and it's with open faint. So the idea is that, you know, the faster and faster you get at this, the better. So there's the game board at the top, and the clues are at the bottom. And the way the game board is set up, now bear with me, because it's pretty simple, but it's difficult to explain verbally. So you have a bunch of different blocks, and in each block, you have five icons. Okay, there's a row of blocks with numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's a row of blocks with letters, A, B, C, D, and E. There's a row of blocks with dice, with 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 on it. And there's a row of blocks with five different buttons that kind of look like things you might find on a TV remote, like a play, stop, play, stop, there's a circle, there's a star, and there's one other. So you've got five columns. So for like the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, each column is going to have either a 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. And you have to figure out what order they're in. It could be, you know, 5, 3, 1, 2, 4, or whatever. And the same thing for the letters and the dice and everything. So the hints below are things like, dice number one is to the left of letter A, and thus letter A is to the right of dice number one. And the star is in the same column as the number two, and things like that. So you use these different hints to narrow down. You tap on a block and it pulls it up, and then you tap on the letters or numbers that you want to get rid of. And so through the process of elimination, you whittle it down until you get what the solution is. It sounds kind of simple. It may even sound not all that exciting, but if you're into logic type of puzzles and logic games, it's a lot of fun. It's quick and easy. It's the type of thing you can sit down with and play a game or two and then walk away from. Depending on your skill level, games are going to range from, I mean, if you're really good, you can get it down to about 2.5 minutes. If you're not quite as good, you know, I'd say probably maybe 7 minutes on average for a game is not too bad. And it's $1.99, but more importantly, you can try out the free version. And again, if you like logic puzzles and if you like kind of quick and easy, hop into the game and hop out of it, I would recommend it. It's called Marple, M-A-R-P-L-E. And that is my pick for the week. I think that's probably going to wrap up this show for this week. Don't forget to check out the App Chatter website. And on there, the most recent review I'm looking at here is for Ragdoll Blaster 2. And I won't talk too much about Rob's review of that other than to say it's generally favorable. But you should head over to the website and check it out. I've got this game. I have not yet had a chance to play it, but I'm kind of curious about it now. So head on over to appchatter.com for more news and reviews. And don't forget to head over to randomchatter.com for more of our podcasts. And check out the Random Chatter iPhone application. There will be an iPad version coming soon. And from that, you can stream all of our podcasts. Most importantly, of course, is including App Chatter. And I guess that's about it. Is there anything else we want to... Oh, follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/appchatter and twitter.com/randomchatter. That's where we'll be making announcements about the live shows. We do stream our shows live. It looks like they are going to be Thursday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern time. For you international people, I think... normally that's GMT minus 5, but I guess with daylight savings time, it's probably minus 4. I should probably look that up. Anyway, if you're international and you look at the Eastern time zone in the United States, we will be at 10 o'clock live every Thursday night. And you can find the link on the Random Chatter Twitter account, but do not forget to also get the App Chatter Twitter account. Rob does a lot of reviews and news there as well. Is there anything else I'm forgetting, guys?
Anything else you guys want to throw in? I think that
covers
it. Cool. Yeah, I think we're good.
All right, then. Don't forget to email us, podcast@appchatter.com. And again, especially if you have some type of a turn-by-turn navigation system, we'd like to know more about what you're using and whether or not you like it, whether you'd recommend it to people. And if you don't and you want to email us anyway, go ahead and do that. We would love to hear from you. And we would also like ideas. If there's a certain type of application you're looking for and you want recommendations or a certain particular app you want to know more about, let us know. And we would be more than happy to research that for you. And that's it. Tune in next week. Hopefully we will be covering comic book applications, but we'll be covering more than just that too. So if you're not a comic book geek, don't worry. We'll have other good stuff for you. So that's it for this week of App Chatter. Until next week, take care.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
See ya.
For more great app reviews, check out appchatter.com. The songs in this episode are My Own Little World and Unlikely, both written and performed by Celldweller, which you can find at celldweller.com. The show is part of the Random Chatter Podcast Network, which you can find at randomchatter.com. This show is copyright 2010 appchatter.com, and as silly as a sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. Until next time, take care.